This is Mountain News and World Report, WMMT's weekly sojourn into life in Central Appalachia. We now invite you to join us for a visit with folks you may or may not know, items of interest to us all, and shining moments in our living history.
Hello and welcome to Mountain News. I'm your host, Laura Hughes. In this episode, we'll hear about young folks organizing for a more inclusive and sustainable future in their mountain homes. Then, we'll learn about how community groups in Wise County, Virginia, are working with Montgomery, Alabama-based Equal Justice Initiative to acknowledge the history of lynchings in their county through research and public markers. And last, from the Ohio Valley Resource, we'll learn about a recent report citing the Ohio Valley region as home to some of the most disadvantaged communities in the country. First, WMMT's Rachel Geringer takes us along on a visit to the STAY Project's Appalachian Love Fest. STAY, which stands for Stay Together Appalachian Youth, is a regional network of young folks from across the Central Appalachian region.
It was quiet on the streets of Harlan, Kentucky on the Saturday after Valentine's Day. But outside the Moonbow Tipple coffee shop, a group of people chatted on the sidewalk.
You don't mind. Besides, you're pretty. Pretty now, Jay.
You're a pretty girl.
Inside, the STAY Project was hosting their first ever music festival. Young folks from all over the region gathered to share their songs, poetry, and art with one another. There were performers from across the region, and even as far away as Alabama.
My name is Xavier. I'm from Birmingham, Alabama, and about it.
My name is Jacob Scott, and I'm from Birmingham, Alabama.
And so I wonder if y'all could describe kind of where we're at today.
We is in Kentucky at the Appalachian Love Fest. People from different states bringing their talent to one area and everybody meeting up again.
Anything you want to add?
Beautiful people coming to a beautiful place to partake in beautiful talent and beautiful art. Yeah.
Can I ask you both to say a little bit about like what you shared on the stage today so far? Can we start with you?
I shared my love and talent for poetry. I've been writing ever since my sophomore year in high school as a way to kind of just get away from my community and kind of just do better for myself and for my family. And poetry has taken me very, 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 very far.
Cool. Thank you.
What about you? I shared some songs out of my album. It haven't dropped yet. I'm still waiting on my producer to drop it. I just literally started back writing songs. It's a very good gift. I'm using it, you know, as a mindset to help me work hard and get out of Birmingham. I stepped outside with a few current STAY steering committee members to learn more about the event and STAY's annual Appalachian Love Week.
Hi, I'm Sav. I'm from North Alabama, just in the little entrails of Appalachia, Etowah County. I'm 23 years old, born on June 14th, 1996.
I'm Bradford Harris. I'm from Harlan, Kentucky, and I'm 19.
I'm Jules Kessler. I'm from Greenbrier County, West Virginia, and going to school at West Virginia Wesleyan College, and I'm 21.
Hey, I'm Micaiah Davis, born and raised in Big Sun Gap, Virginia, though I'm currently living in Johnson City, Tennessee, but about to move back to Big Sun Gap, woo-woo. 23 years old, also born on June 14th, 1996.
Hey, Gemini.
I'm Genoa Davis, born and raised in Big Stone Gap, also living in Johnson City, but about to move back to Big Stone. And I'm also 23 and born on June 14th, 1996.
Oh. Wait, are you twins?
Yeah.
How did I not know that? Okay.
We're triplets.
Really? Amazing. Okay. So what is Appalachian Love Week?
Appalachian Love Week has been an annual fundraiser week for STAVE for the past several years. And it is a week where we paint this picture of the region of why we choose to stay, like why we love the place or don't love it. And just really just kind of like, or the hashtag we use is Appalachian Love Story. And we encourage folks to tell their love story of the region. And sometimes that love story is beautifully complicated, and that's okay. It doesn't always have to be sunshines and rainbows, but it's your love story. It's our love story.
Hmm. Anybody want to add anything to that? Okay, I'm not.
Just that love can mean a lot of things.
Mm. What do you mean by that?
I think it can be a coming together, and it can be complicated and hard and painful sometimes even, which is hard to admit because that's not the story that people like to tell about love, but that's our love for this place.
So where are we today? What's happening?
Well, we're in Sweet Home, Harlan, Kentucky, here for Appalachian Love Fest, which is an arts and activism festival celebrating all the wonderful young folks doing the work here in Appalachia. We're so spatially isolated, it can be easy to forget that we're out here, we are radical, and we are creative, and we are active making moves. So we wanted to take this opportunity in the middle of Love Week to convene and love on one another a little bit, love our work, love our art, love each other, love this place. And ain't no better place to do it than Harlan. Honestly, they have really built up a scene for young people who want to be radical, who want to be different, who want to act up and act out and, you know, be there for one another. And so I'm happy that, you know, we've gotten folks from basically every state in the region to come down and celebrate each other, one another, this place, all of it.
So how many performers are there today? Do you know?
About 17, 18, not including some folks from different organizations, artists who came through. We try to make it as, you know, representative of a mix of genres and performers and creators as we could. Appalachian music is not just folk and bluegrass, though that might be what it means to me. It means so much more to everyone's here. You know, we got punk, we got rap, we got spoken word, we got indie, we got bluegrass, all of it. And I think that's critical because so often everyone else gets erased, right? And we want to provide a platform for people to show up and be appreciated for what they do for themselves and for us.
That was beautiful. Yeah.
It was really good. Yeah.
What has been a highlight so far in terms of maybe performances or just what's happened today and or what you're looking forward to? Because there's still, what, like 6 more hours to go or something? 5? 7? I don't know how long you're here. A long time. So, yeah, highlights so far, things you're looking forward to.
Okay. I've gotten to hear the mountain dulcimer played better than I've ever heard it played before. I've also gotten to hear hip-hop acts that were just amazing and some, like, anti-folk, punk, all sorts of wild stuff, and it's been amazing.
So me and Jules, yesterday when we were just sitting there talking yesterday evening, and 7-8 months ago at our second steering committee meeting ever together, this is an idea we had. I was like, you know, like, it'd be cool to have a music festival to showcase all the different artists and whatnot throughout our region. And here we are 8 months later, and it's not been an easy 8 months, but, like, I'm just so thankful to work with such a brilliant group of young people and hardworking, like driven young folks that are out here like creating space that's not been like that's not been created for us before. We're celebrating, and like we said, just celebrating our creativity, our ingenuity, and just coming together across our vast physical isolation we often face, and coming together to celebrate this beautiful event.
Okay, so the last question is like, maybe, I don't know if this is hard or easy, but, and ideally everyone would share something, but I kind of want to know what like your all's Appalachian love stories are.
That's something that I've really been sitting with over the past few years, is what does my love for Appalachia mean? And I've come to find out it means the community that I build, really sitting with and resonating with how this place has shaped me, my thoughts, my ideology, my whole, like, it's shaped my life. And just have to, I just have to give credit to the place that has shaped me so much and been so influential to my life. My love story is beautifully complicated, as any love story is, but it is one of growing to love the place that has shaped me and who I am.
For me, it's just been just looking for a home in the people I've met, because like where I'm from, like it's not too welcoming if you're a person of color, at least not completely. And just to know that there are other people out there in Appalachia that I can be around and actually love myself and love them wholeheartedly without having to resist or give up anything or hide who I am, like that means the world to me.
I don't know, for me it's just like loving where I came from, because for a long time I was like kind of just taught that this place kind of just sucks and it's our fault. So it was just nice to like be in spaces like Stay, where like I've just been empowered to like know that, you know, things can change, and like that's been just awesome. And like I would say like my love story is just like not, I don't know, just like moving on and like trying to rebuild rather than just like blaming the people before you, because that's only going to leave you in their situation. So I would say for me it's just, you know, who cares what old people say, you know, those people. That's my love story. Oh, I'm sorry. Was I not allowed to cuss?
I have experience bleeping cuss words. Believe it or not. Believe it or not. How about over here?
Super tough question. I would echo what everyone else said. And also, there's a particular, I would say my love story is a very particular feeling that I have in my body when I'm around these people and when I'm in this place. Anytime I leave the region, when I come back, there's a particular ease, a complicated ease that I feel here.
Yeah, my love story is these folks right here, really, our group chat on Insta. It's our, you know, late night conversations, getting in at 1:30 and talking till 3:30 or 4 in the morning. It's the ones who get it, and then these relationships and the good hearts, the young hearts who care and who aren't giving up and who are really like changing it for each other and for ourselves.
I want to hear some noise!
Thank you.
To learn more about the Stay Project and their annual Appalachian Love Week, you can find them online, www.thestayproject.net. For WMMT, I'm Rachel Geringer.
Community groups in Wise County, Virginia are working to research and acknowledge the history of racial violence in the area in the early 1900s. WMMT's Rachel Geringer brings us this story.
Tell the angels that I'm on my way. Tell the angels that I'll be home someday. And tell the angels I'm on my way to glory. Up there, I'm gonna tell my story.
The Equal Justice Initiative's Community Remembrance Project aims to recognize the more than 4,400 documented victims of lynchings across the American South between 1977 and 1950. Their website describes the purpose of the project. Quote, "To create greater awareness and understanding about racial terror lynchings and to begin a necessary conversation that advances truth and reconciliation, EJI is working with communities to commemorate and recognize the traumatic era of lynching by collecting soil from lynching sites across the country and erecting historical markers and monuments in these spaces." End quote. Community members in Wise County, Virginia, have been working with EJI to research the three lynchings that took place in the county in 1902, 1920, and 1927, with the goal of setting a marker to memorialize those victims. As a part of that work, Tom Costa, a history professor at the University of Virginia's College at Wise, and retired teacher Preston Mitchell, have been working with students Zoe Critchfield, Tommy Noble, and Dylan Mabe to research the lynchings that took place in Wise County. On February 12th, they held a public presentation about their research. Before we hear audio from their presentation, this is Preston Mitchell describing Wise County's history with the Community Remembrance Project.
My name is Preston Mitchell. I'm a retired teacher here at the college and coach, and I'm a deacon in the Episcopal Church, is where some of my work comes in with this racial reconciliation. I live in Big Stone Gap. The Community Remembrance Project that we're working on stems from the recognition of the lynchings that occurred nationwide. I guess the genesis is the Legacy Museum in Montgomery and the Memorial Gardens that recognizes the 4,400 documented lynchings of African Americans, of which three occurred in Wise County. That seems like a rather small number out of 4,400, but that's what we're concentrating on, are those three lynchings. And when we first started doing that, and it came out of a request from the University of Virginia that was working with the ones in Albemarle County, and they knew that I had already begun some work in Wythe County, which was in our purvey of the Diocese of Southwestern Virginia, and so I was kind of pulled into that because I had already been doing some work and had been to the Absalom Jones Center for Racial Reconciliation in Atlanta. So I was pulled into that, and one of the things that I pointed out is that before we proceeded any further with recognizing the lynchings, is we needed to get community support. This didn't need to be something that came from the Episcopal Church or from the University of Virginia at Wise. It needed to be a broad-based community support. And so Tom and I talked either singularly or together to civic clubs, to historical societies, to churches, to elicit some support that way. And frankly, we got some pushback early on, similar to the pushback we got in Wythe County, and that was this: why are you bringing this up? This is something that happened long ago. We all know lynching was bad. Why are you bringing this up? You're just opening up some old wounds. That was the argument. And my counter to that is that if we truly want to reconcile, if we're truly looking at racial reconciliation, we can't reconcile until we recognize. You can't do it. And so to recognize means to dip into the historical pool and tell the story about what happened. What is it we want to be reconciled for? What is it we're saying was wrong? And we got a huge boost in February of last year when the General Assembly in Virginia passed the joint resolution unanimously that said calling for not only apologizing for the lynchings as a state, but also calling for communities to do their own research, to have discussions, to talk about it. It's only that way can we in the legacy of racism, and that was the language in there, the legacy of racism. You know, I think a lot of white people want to say, oh, yeah, we're not, you know, we don't have racism anymore. But in fact, we have that latent and sometimes institutional racism, and that's what we're, that's a part of the bigger picture. And so, with that General Assembly resolution, we have very incrementally, intentionally, so I would say, have been going to these communities. We went to the town of Coburn first. Coburn probably had the two. They had not only had the Wiley Gwynn lynching in 1902, but it was the killing of Herschel Deaton, a Coburn resident. And so we went there first, and probably the toughest one. But they had a copy of the General Assembly resolution. We did the presentation, and they crafted their own resolution saying that Coburn, you know, was on board. And from there, we've gone to Wise, we've gone to the city of Norton, we've gone to Pound, we've gone to Big Stone Gap, and we're going to Appalachia on Thursday, February the 20th. So. Eventually, we want to take the resolution to the Wise County Board of Supervisors.
Next, Tom Costa tells us a bit about how the summer research project into Wise County lynching history came about.
My name is Tom Costa. I'm a professor and chair of the history department here at the University of Virginia's College at Wise. I've been here 28 years. I teach Virginia history and African American history, and I have a website on runaway slave advertisements. I got interested in the lynching project because of my friendship with Preston Mitchell, who had been working on the Raymond Byrd lynching in Wythe County in 1926. And then we were asked by the university in Charlottesville if we had anybody interested in working on the Wise County lynchings in cooperation with the Equal Justice Initiative, the Lynching Museum in Montgomery, Alabama. So that's how I got interested in the project. We started looking into things. I talked to Tabitha Smith, our director of compliance and inclusion, who had been working on a grant from Charlottesville to develop diversity initiatives here on campus. And so she agreed to include a project on the Wise County lynchings, working with Equal Justice Initiative. And as part of that grant, there were funds for student research. So the students were actually, I recruited them from different classes, but it wasn't actually a class that they were working. Zoe Critchfeld was in my Virginia history class. Dylan Mabe was taking my African history class. And then Tommy Noble, I think, was also in the Virginia history class or maybe another class. So I recruited the three of them because I knew they could do the work.
Student Dylan McCabe shares some of their summer research findings.
So at this point, we started talking about what we had observed over this time. And what we observed is that prior to each of these lynchings, there are these cases to where racial tensions are heightened directly before. And in the case of Gwynn, that goes with the Robert Foy case that we found. And this was the prior December, a black man named Robert Foy shot and killed the treasurer of the Crane's Nest Coal Company in Toms Creek, the same town. So Foy had rented a house with the company for some time, but was not occupying it. And when he learned that the house, the rent from the house was still being taken out of his pay, he, quote unquote, from the newspapers, became aggressive and shot Miller and wounded another white man. So newspapers picked this up instantly. They started predicting that mob rule was gonna happen, that mob was gonna show up at the jail at any time. And then the trial itself is muddled with many, many different events, a thrown out verdict, appeals, delays in the trial, delays in the hanging, and a jailbreak on Foy's case, an outbreak of smallpox, all these things delaying this trial until the next year, 1902, to when right before Gwen was lynched. So we started to look into how this would most likely have heightened racial tensions right before, and that many of the men who were involved in the bomb that descended upon the jail in Bombtown probably were very familiar with the Foy case, and that had insinuated this mob mentality and this violence. And we looked at how important the proximity and the time was. It's in the same town, it is the same year as Gwen right before it. We see this public outrage through the newspapers, through letters to the editor, through all these kind of things. So we found distinct evidence in all of them, especially this one, that heightened racial tensions before led to more and more violence against black people in this area.
Well, I'm talking about this place, mercy and grace.
To learn more about the Equal Justice Initiative and the National Community Remembrance Project, visit eji.org. For WMMT, I'm Rachel Geringer.
Last, in this episode of Mountain News, Ohio Valley Resource reporter Becca Schimmel brings us a story about economic disadvantage in the region.
A new report finds several Ohio Valley communities among the most deeply disadvantaged in the country on measures of health, wealth, and social mobility. Becca Schimmel reports.
The report comes from the University of Michigan's Poverty Solutions, an initiative to eliminate or alleviate poverty through action-based research. Their work draws on data about income, health, and social mobility to create a disadvantage index. Luke Schaefer is a professor of social work and public policy. He runs Poverty Solutions. He says he was surprised to see that most of the disadvantaged communities were not in urban areas.
Not to say that we shouldn't have policies that try to address poverty in our urban centers, but that we should look a lot more at what's going on in some of the rural parts of the country.
Schaefer says the life expectancy in the 100 most disadvantaged communities, including those in Kentucky and Ohio, is similar to North Korea, Bangladesh, and Mongolia. He hopes the disadvantage index will start a conversation about the needs of people living in poverty. For the Ohio Valley Resource, I'm Becca Schimmel.
That's it for this episode of Mountain News. If you'd like to hear this or previous episodes again, you can find them on our website at wmmt.org or download Mountain News as a podcast from SoundCloud or Stitcher. Intro and outro music on this episode feature Pigmeat Jarrett with a tune called Walkin' Blues off his album Look at the People. Other music on this episode comes from Earl Gilmore off his album, From the Depths of My Soul. Both of these albums were released by Apple Shop's own June Apple Recordings. I've been your host, Laura Hughes, and from all of us at WMMT, thanks for listening to Real People Radio.
This has been Mountain News and World Report, a production of WMMT-FM, Mountain Community Public Radio, the non-commercial broadcast service of the world-famous Apple Shop in Whitesburg, Kentucky.